This is Jason Block here on Spectrum One, and I have the pleasure of doing this WLTI Extra with a very good friend of mine who just won $5,000 on a game show that I appeared on. That would be Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. He's also one of the founders of Home Game Enterprises with a Z, which we will talk about a little bit later on. But he's my buddy Travis Griffin. Travis, what's up, man?
Not too much, Jason. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's absolutely. So tell me about the audition process, your audition process for Millionaire and how that went.
Well, the audition process was reasonably quick. It was they just announced that they were starting their new season. So they put up an open casting call, and they were doing it in L.A., in Vegas, and a couple of other places. So since I live in Los Angeles, I figured I'll take over there and clocked out of work one day and went over, you know, made the appointment and everything. Took a 30-question test. They give you, I think it was 10 minutes to do the 30-question test. After 3.5 minutes, I was completely done and looked up, and everyone was still working, and I thought, I've screwed up something. So I spent the
Isn't that the way you all the finish you when you finish a test first, you either did really well or bombed miserably.
Exactly. So right. I spent the rest of the time going back through every question, making sure I read it right, and I didn't change any of my answers. Everything, I was happy with the way everything went. They took the test, graded them, came back, and then from the dozen or so that were in the room, they culled it down to 5. I was one of them. Mm-hmm. They took us into a separate holding area. They brought us individually for in-person interviews. Then if we did well there, then they gave us a screen test where we had to answer 2 questions on camera to show how we would talk through our answers. I got an email a week later that said I was in the pool, and an email a week after that a call a week after that that said, can you tape on July 6th? And I said, sure, I'll take a day off work. I don't care. So my plus one, Adam Neidiff, and I went to Vegas for 3 days, and that was it.
So you you get up there and you know, first of all, not a bad guy to have a plus one for.
Definitely, yeah. Published author and game show expert and noted wit and raconteur, Adam Neidiff, yeah.
The new Orson Bean, as we say.
Yeah, yes.
So you get up there, and were you nervous?
No, this is the fourth time I've been on a game show. So nothing, it was old hat. I'll consider it old hat to be a contestant. And since I got my job at CBS Electronics working for different game shows around town, it was nothing for me to stand on a set and talk to a host and talk to producers. And it was like it was second nature almost. I felt like it was in my comfort zone.
Speaking of in your comfort zone, that first question, good grief.
that first question, if you watch the tape, you can see this evil sneer creep across my face. I'm thinking, I was worried about the first question, and they handed me this. All right, let's go.
Yeah, so you nail the first 5, pretty much.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so you have 5.
Well, through the first 5.
Yeah, you have the $5,000, and then,
yeah.
Then of course you play the first lifeline about, you know, the 7,000 question was about a 217-mile-an-hour golf swing, okay,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't bad, okay,
but then
you have the question. You know,
it's what I call the gut punch. This was absolutely the punch in the kidneys that I didn't need.
Uh-huh. And so, which is, based on a poem, the national charity, from the Monday's child poem, which child has far to go.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, what? You had that deer in the headlights look with all
yeah.
the, you know, and you know nothing. And then did you do the 50-50 first and then they asked the audience, or how did it work?
Well, I did 50-50 on the golf drive question. But
oh, that's right.
Let me explain my thought process going through this $10,000 question. So
yeah.
It comes up on screen. And Monday's Child, Monday's Child. I've heard this way far back in the back of my head, and I know two lines from it, but only the ends of those two lines. I knew Full of Grace and Fair of Face. If I could place those two, I could probably place the rest of it. The other thing that creeped into my head was back home, our local news, WTAP, would run a feature on Wednesday, like an adoption segment called Wednesday's Child. Okay, that doesn't seem to fit either. So let me go to the audience. Now, earlier in the day, I had the chance to sort of walk in the lobby because I was being escorted to the restroom because contestants have to get escorted everywhere.
Believe
So I
me,
sort of
believe me, yeah. Yeah.
So I sort of took a look over the crowd, and it looked like they skewed kind of older. So nursery rhymes tend to go a little older, especially this one. I figured I never heard it when I was a kid, so maybe the older folks did. So I threw it to the audience. And the results came back 43, 11, 25, and 21. And I'm like, okay, Tuesday's Child, I'm not sold. And it's like the split of the audience was almost borderline. And I didn't trust it. So I called down my plus one. I'm thinking he's a fountain of information from any possible source. So something's got to click. So I called down Adam. He came down. And then when he mentioned the Addams Family, and said that Wednesday's Child is full of woe, it's like, that's the rhyme scheme I needed. And then he mentioned Tuesday, Tuesday's Child has far to go, Wednesday's Child is full of woe. Well, Tuesday being very far away from the weekend, okay, that makes sort of sense, and the rhyme scheme works. It gelled with what the audience said. I went with it. And it was Thursday's Child, and immediately the thought that went, the logic was correct, but backwards because the week starts on Monday, not Sunday.
Yep, and there goes the shot. But you still have a check for $5,000 coming your way.
Still got a check for 5 grand, and I'm perfectly fine with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what are your plans for the money?
I've got some bad debts that I need to pay back, and I'm going to update my Universal Studios Hollywood annual pass, and that's pretty much about it.
There you go. Now, let's just talk about some other stuff because you said you actually work in game shows. I mean, I know you, but you have always had a foot in game shows as far along as I've known you. You've done stuff in college. How far back does your game show fandom go?
It goes back almost the entire scheme. I was introduced two game shows. My mother will tell this story at 6 months old. She put me in my playpen and turned on my first babysitter, who was Bob Barker, and I watched The Price is Right at 6 months old. And back in the day, I'm not really cognizant of things. It's like flashing lights and ooh and loud noises, and it's fun. And then as I get older, I start learning what these shows are about, and it's like I learned how to read and spell basically from Wheel of Fortune. I learned how to do numbers from Price is Right because it's all numbers, it's all math based. And then basically everything else I know is due to Jeopardy and every other trivia show that was ever been on. So I've always had just this attraction to the genre, and I'm like, I'm gonna try to make this a part of my life. So in 2003, I was fortunate enough to be a contestant on Price, and 3 years after that, I was an intern, and that was my foot in the door. That was like, okay, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I need to know how. Because once I was an intern, I was seeing the backside. Like, I was behind the doors, behind everything else, seeing how the shows got put together, seeing how the contestants got picked, and everything like that. And I've said this from the beginning, being there and working in game shows in general, no matter what level of production I'm on, I'm helping people make life-changing amounts of money. And to be a part of that is absolutely worth every dime and every moment of my effort.
There are so many people who we know and who would give their right arm to have the knowledge that you have and to have made the career that you have
Yeah.
had. And, you know, like I, because like I said, I kind of started to know you when you did this in college at the University of Ohio, where you ran, you know, ran Price is Right. And now you're doing this as sort of a, as sort of a side business with this company you did called Home Game Enterprises. How did that come about?
Well, Home Game Enterprises was born out of the Ohio University Game Show Appreciation Society. So going back in history, I attended Ohio University from 03 to 07, graduated with Bachelor of Specialized Studies. I'll explain what that is in a minute because it factors in. But what they do for the freshmen is the move-in weekend before classes start, they have all the student organizations have a table on the college green, and you're permitted to go, you know, take a look around, maybe join a club, join a frat, you know, whatever interests you. I spent a good 2 hours walking around that. It's called the involvement fair. Walking around that fair, and nothing hit me. I'm like, nothing is singing to me. Nothing is where I want it to be. Or, you know, I didn't want to join a frat. I didn't want to join any of the other clubs. I'm not athletic, so I'm not going to join club sports. And just nothing was there. So I was part of the college ball team because they had shown us that at orientation. And I made friends with the coach and the advisor. And I asked him sort of later in the year, and it's a gentleman known to both of us, name of Dave Peffer.
Oh, wow. Okay. No kidding.
Was the College Bowl advisor.
Nice.
And I said, would you be a faculty advisor if I started the game show club? And he absolutely jumped on board. So in March of that year, March of 04, I started the Game Show Appreciation Society. And the first meeting was two people. It was me and Dave. And so we kicked it off proper. We watched the first episode of The Price is Right in the, you know, the crappiest copy we could find.
September 4th, 1972, for those who don't know. Yep.
Exactly. So, and it was the worst quality either one of us could find because, you know, it's 2004. So the tape trading circuit is really hot. YouTube hasn't come along, you know, as strongly. So we just found this tape. We played it, and that was it. But the impetus behind the club was, you know, celebrate the genre, talk about our favorite games, and maybe play a home game. So in the summer of that year, I had determined that I wanted to try to learn to program because I saw a lot of John Ricci Jr.'s work with Flash game shows. I had watched videos of Grego's game shows when he does the anime conventions. And I thought, I want to do something like this. So I reached out to Grego, Greg Wicker. And I said, can you help me? And he absolutely did. He sent me a copy of Bitter's Row software, and he sent me the base code. So I just sort of went into the code, learned how to do it, and taught myself how to program in Flash. Once I did that, I brought all this knowledge to my game show club, and we started doing live events on the college campus. We did Card Sharks for a homecoming weekend. We did Family Feud for a parents weekend. We started doing Pressure Luck and Wheel of Fortune for SIDS weekend. And then when the moms came into town, we did Price is Right. And the last year I was at school, which was 07, we sold out the newest auditorium on campus. They just rebuilt the student center. They put in a 190 seat theater. We sold 191 seats.
Wow.
So we were the first organization to sell out that theater. And it was 191 people. We played six games, you know, regular episode of Price is Right. It was a 5 out of 6 show with a walk away and step up. And I came out on stage and I was wearing a tuxedo because it's like, it's the last time I'm going to do this. I'm doing it formal. I'm wearing a tux. And I walked out on stage to the standing ovation, and I thought, this is what I'm going to miss about this.
Must have blown you away, that moment.
Absolutely blew me out of the water. So I thought, this is absolutely what I want to do. I moved out to L.A. in 2010 and tried to get my foot in the door a little bit, but I had this knowledge with me of how to program and how to do these events. So I talked to my roommates and friends. I said, let's make it a business. So we called it Home Game Enterprises. And we do a lot of in-home parties. We do conventions and, just a lot of stuff that is unlike your regular party entertainment. Like, we're not a bouncy castle. We're not a clown. We're going to get you involved. We're going to play some games with you. And we're going to recreate as close to a real contestant experience as you can get without actually standing on a stage. And we've had so much success with that over the 7 years that I've lived out here.
And with that, that has translated into the game show Throwdown, the word I can use, which has been involved with the Trivia Championships of North America for the last couple of years. That's must be an incredibly hard but fun year-long project to deal with.
It really is, because it sings to everything I like. It sings to game shows. It sings to event planning, and it helps me to sort of be the producer again. I get to get all my friends together in a room and say, okay, we've got an event in 1 year. What games do we want to play? We've got 24 hours to fill. What do we want to fill it with? And we have a 3-hour meeting usually to come up with a big list of games. I look at them, call it down to about 35, and then call it down to the final like 20 or so that we're actually going to play, put them in the schedule, assign the hosts. We've actually got the schedule set right now. It's not going to be publicized as of yet. The hosts know what they're going to do. In November, I'm going to sign writers. In December, we'll start working on, check in with the writers, maybe start working on a little bit of graphics. In February is when we will publicize the schedule, and in March, we start taking the signups. So still about 5 months removed from the actual convention when we're going to play the games in August, in March, we start getting the players, because that's when membership usually ticks up for T-Kona. It's like, hey, there's something else going on at T-Kona. Why don't you sign up and play this? And we've had a lot of success. We had a lot of success last year, a lot of great players. You were one of them.
Thank you.
And the games that you were in were absolutely entertaining. And hopefully you'll be back next year.
I would love to. I just have to just get a couple side jobs here and there and make enough money to save. But I have to ask, and again, because the charity you worked for last year was Child's Play and Extra Life.
No, not
Child's Play. I'm so sorry. It's the Children's Miracle Network. My apologies.
Children's Miracle Network via Extra Life.
I apologize for that.
That's okay.
And we got a blowaway amount of money, which was over $7,000, which was just outstanding.
And counting,
yes, because the donations at homegameenterprises.com with a Z / show, I believe,
slash
throwdown, right? You can, and there's a donate button.
homegameenterprises.com/throwdown. I believe the donations link is still available. If anyone goes to the Extra Life website and just searches 2017 Game Show Throwdown, it will go to our donation page.
Yep.
And they can select any one of our participants. And we all raise donations for different children's hospitals across the country and in Canada.
Yes.
And so if you want to raise money for New York, for Los Angeles, for Las Vegas, we actually, in addition to the online donations, we raise money in the room. We had a bucket for cash donations.
Yeah.
And all of those donations stayed. Whatever we raise in Vegas stays in Vegas. So we donated to one of the children's hospitals in the Vegas area.
Now, speaking of Las Vegas, because it is your guy's second home.
Yes.
And again, I don't want to put you on the spot right now, but if I am, my apologies here. We all know what happened about a month ago now.
Yes.
In Las Vegas. Is the Throwdown in 2018 going to necessarily, are we going to split the donations just yet, or are we going to go specifically still towards children's hospitals, or what? Have you thought about that?
The Throwdown and the events leading up to it have always been for the kids.
Yeah.
And we're going to keep it for the kids as much as my heart goes out to the victims and everything that happened in Vegas a couple of weeks ago, our throwdown will stay for the kids.
And
like you said, Vegas is our second home. And honestly, for me, I feel like it is my second home because every time I drive to Vegas for the convention, I feel like I'm home and I can get around town really easily. But no, the throwdown will remain for the kids.
Yeah, by the way, fantastic. I mean, that, like I said, being there and just being involved with that and nearly passing out after sleeping, not sleeping 24 hours in a very freezing room, but it was so worth it. And all the people you're involved with, you know, you have an incredible crew, just to let you know. You guys have an amazing crew. But you said earlier on that you now work for CBS. This was pretty much your last in front game show, right? Pretty much.
This is my last. Millionaire was the end of the road. I was hoping to go out a little bit bigger than $5,000, but it's the end of the road. It puts me to career winnings of over 50,000 over the course of four shows. But it's a case now that where I work and who I've been in contact over the past 7 years, I am too far down the rabbit hole. I know too many people in this industry. I know too many producers, too many, you know, casting people. I can't get in anywhere. I'm automatically ineligible for anything. I can't be on Price Again because I worked there. I can't be on Wheel because two of the guys in my shop worked for the show. And every other show that comes on the air, either we're involved with or I know someone that works there. So
that's it.
Millionaire was the absolute last.
But let me ask you something. I know both you've had, you know, good experiences both in front and behind.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any regrets or no? Not being able to be on any shows anymore.
Mm-hmm. No, I've done everything in terms of being a contestant. I feel like I've done everything I wanted to do. The when your first show is Price is Right, the first show out the door that you're on is Price is Right, it's pretty much downhill from there because you are starting at the top of the mountain. And with my experience on Price, for those of your listeners who don't know, my experience on Price was I was the first contestant called of the first show of the 32nd year. I played the first game, which was Lucky 7, and I won a Cadillac. I pretty much just can't look back from that. You know, it was Hot Tub is my one bid, a Cadillac in my game, and I played Lucky 7. I had $2 left over, so $49,270, and I'm 22 years old.
But who's counting, right?
I pretty much hit the limit at that point. Yeah, but who's counting? And actually, the funny bit of that is I went over on the Wheel, so I didn't make it to the showcases, but my total was still about $10,000 higher than the showcase winners from that day. So in board game rules, I won the day because I had the highest total, but I didn't make it all the way to the end.
Insane stuff.
Yeah.
We always ask a couple of sort of fun questions here as
sure.
we end.
Yeah.
Okay. Favorite game show of all time?
Press Your Luck.
Favorite game show host of all time?
Ooh, that one's hard. That one is hard, and I have reasons for my answers. Barker is really high number one. But I've always liked sort of the snarkiness of Peter Tamarkin. So usually tied for top is Barker and Tamarkin.
Let's just say for argument's sake that you had the ability to bring back any format you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
What would it be?
It would be a tie. It would be either Press Your Luck or Blockbusters.
Wow, because Blockbusters is always one of the faves at Ticona, and it's a great show. Mm-hmm. It's a great show.
And it moves so fast.
Yeah. It's insane. Last one. If we haven't covered anything that that we didn't talk about, floor's yours. What do you want to say?
Well, one, thank you for the opportunity to extol the virtues of the inside of the game show world. It's been a fun career as a contestant. I'm glad I am where I am now, because now I can work on the other side of things and see, well, I've seen how a show's put together, but now if you watch a show and see any graphics on screen, I might be the one actually running that. So you might not see me on screen, but you'll still see my influence on a lot of shows. Especially one shortly coming up on GSN that's a British import.
Really? That one?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Let me
paint a picture for you.
Okay.
When I was a contestant on Price, I was just, you know, it was an amazing experience. It was 14 years ago. I had the opportunity to work on GSN's Emo Genius a few months ago.
Okay.
And one of the supervising producers was actually a contestant on Debt. And you'll know the contestant I'm talking about because he's the one that took his wig off.
Okay.
So he came into my office and we were just sort of talking about our experiences. And I told him I was on Price. He had never seen it. I pulled up the video and I watched real closely because it's the first time I've watched it about like 150, 200 times. I'm sick of me on Price. And I watched real closely and I saw someone behind me sitting in the second row when I'm on camera in Bitter's row, someone seated in the second row, sort of in the VIP area that I thought I recognized. And we both looked real tight at it. We said, "That's Aaron Solomon." I had contact with Aaron Solomon 7 years prior to meeting him in person when I was a contestant on One Versus 100, and 13 years prior to working with him on Idiot Test. He was behind me in the audience.
That's a small world.
I took the screen grab. I sent it to Aaron. I said, "Is that you?" He said, "Give me the audience pan. Let me see who's next to me, and I can tell you." So I went back to the beginning of the video, went through the audience pan, sent him that. He's like, "Yeah, that's me." So I've got Aaron Solomon in my audience. Now, I worked with him on Idiot Test, and he and I have remained, you know, good friends and associates. When the bid came in for this GSN show, that's all I'm going to say,
mm-hmm.
he specifically requested me to run the electronics.
Wow.
So the graphics that you see outside of maybe one taping day that we have scheduled, it's going to be me running all the electronics.
Outstanding stuff. Travis, thank you very much for your time, and mm-hmm. We hope to see you down the road very soon. And I hope to see you next August in Vegas and have a meal or two when we're out there.
Let's hope so. I think I'm going to make it a little bit of an extended stay next year just because I love Vegas, and I'm going to spend a little bit extra time. And I will say this about a little bit of a preview for next year's Throwdown. Some returning favorites will come back,
mm-hmm.
and we may have special guests, and that's all I'm going to say.
And I will, and we may talk off air about this.
For
Travis Griffin, this is Jason Block here for the WLTI Extra here on Spectrum One.